to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's Articles of News for the week of the 9th of January. Yes, we still do this show. Sorry about the delay. I know it's been a couple weeks, but opened a new show at the theater with Brittany. She's anxious and white.
The other part is speculation at this point.
Is what? Judgment? Judgmental? No? Speculation?
I would say none of anyone's business,
okay,
really. But
let's leave it at none of anyone's business. But Brittany is here. She's going to do articles of news with us today, which is what it is. So that'll come up in the second half. But right now, check in with you. What's new with you? You haven't been on a year plus. Does that seem right?
No,
oh, no, you were on last summer, right?
Random one at Rob's house.
Yeah. We kind of picked you up or whatever.
Huh?
Like, it was a pickup episode. Like, you were kind of like, yeah, I'll be there. Sure. Randomly.
Yeah. You know, just like to check in and make sure that I was still alive.
And are you?
And I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems kind of existential. I don't know.
But... Oh, jeez.
Yes.
I mean, are any of us really alive?
I mean,
really.
Is any of this real?
I mean, artistically speaking.
Is this the real life or just a fantasy? What is that?
Caught in a landslide. No escape. It's Bohemian Rhapsody.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, we're alive. And more importantly, our fur baby is alive.
Yeah. And when you say our, do you mean mine and yours? Because that's pretty presumptuous.
Our fur baby is still alive. No, so... Levi and I.
Levi is your man friend?
Yes.
Okay.
The nondescript.
Man friend.
Man friend.
Yeah.
Which is another subject that's like, just don't ask about it unless you want to get really frustrated, right?
I don't know that it would frustrate me necessarily, but I don't think that that's a thing that we go, hey, let's just dive into that.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. But this is a more interesting story anyway.
Okay.
So I have a standard poodle named Daisy.
And standard poodle, because there's like mini poodle. Toy is the smallest.
Yeah.
Then you get mini, which is like meh. And then you get like standard, which is like, that's a big dog and it's poodle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Daisy's like 80 pounds.
Right.
You know, they're pretty big dogs. And then Levi, I actually met Levi's dog before I met him.
Sure. That's how it typically goes, isn't it?
And I fell in love with Boston, like... from the moment I saw him. And he's a golden doodle, and he's about 100 pounds. He's a big boy, and he's one of those dogs that it's like, I imagine this is the closest I'm ever going to get to having a really attractive child.
Right.
Because anywhere we would take Boston, people are like, oh my gosh, your dog, da-da-da, can we steal
him? So beautiful, yeah.
Like, literally, people would say, you know, if he ever goes missing, just know that he's... You know,
we're the ones that took him.
Yeah, and he's happy.
That
we'll
funny joke of kidnapping a dog.
Right. Like, oh, that's just adorable. So anyway, I'm going to try and make this as short and succinct as possible, but...
It's
so,
cool.
You're like, you can't do
that. We've heard stories from Janae before, so don't worry about it. So long as it's not a Janae-manite story. I mean, so that means you got less than 30 minutes.
Perfect.
I love you, Janae.
So... Boston is often borrowed by other people because he is just so adorable and lovely.
When you mean borrowed, is it like, hey, we're going out of town for the weekend, you guys can have him? Or is it like, we'd really like to have your dog this weekend, can you bring him by?
It's kind of like, hey, we're going out to the Salt Flats, we're going out to somewhere in the wilderness, we're taking a bunch of dogs. Like Levi's family, they're hunters. They all have dogs of their own, you know, but most of his uncles and cousins' dogs are like specifically hunting dogs.
Okay.
You know, they've bred them for that reason and whatnot. And so, so his uncle had decided to go out to the middle of nowhere, Dugway, Utah, which I didn't even know that was a place. I didn't know it existed. It's near Tooele.
Dugway is where they dispose of old military weapons, both the...
Right.
All sorts of different waste.
Right.
Toxic waste and nuclear things and stuff like that.
Sure, but then people also hunt there.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Sure.
So his uncle took his dog, and then they took Boston, and they took Levi's grandfather, who is suffering with some dementia issues.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's very sad and whatnot, but, you know, just so a day out, just an outing.
Right.
And they took him out... And they were, I guess at one point the uncle left the grandfather in the truck because he's in his late 80s and the grandpa's not going to be hunting.
Right.
So he leaves him in the truck. And this part, we actually still don't know what happened. So we're just going to speculate.
Okay.
We're going to speculate that Boston got left in the truck with with the grandpa, mm-hmm. while Uncle...
Hey,
yeah,
dog will keep you warm,
yeah,
and
exactly.
company.
Well, and he left the truck running because, of course, it was freezing a few days ago. So yeah. you're not going to leave the grandpa in a cold truck.
Sketchy story so far, but I'm following you.
Right. So the uncle...
You stay here, grandpa.
Right.
I know that it's 5 degrees. Keep the dog. The truck is running. I'm going to go hunting. This is...
No,
I'm
no.
I'm not throwing shade on anyone. I'm just saying.
No, and let's also not mention the fact that the grandpa has a history of stealing vehicles.
Yeah.
When he's left with vehicles and keys.
Let us not mention that.
Yeah, let's
Perfect.
Not. Let's
okay.
not say that that was a problem that had happened.
Moved on.
Several times.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. Grandpa, Boston, truck, keys. Left alone. And at some point, Uncle comes back. Truck is gone. Boston gone. But now at this point, he probably has to make a decision which is more important. Or he might have figured that Boston was in the truck with
sure.
Grandpa.
Left the dog with Grandpa.
Right.
Truck was with Grandpa. Truck and Grandpa gone.
Right.
Dog with Grandpa.
So, again, to shorten this, he's out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up calling the sheriff. The sheriff is now on a manhunt for Grandpa, who has dementia, who has taken this truck and is gone.
And it's 5 degrees outside.
And it's 5 degrees outside. We're under the impression that Boston is in the truck with Grandpa, so once we find Grandpa, we'll find Boston. But, of course, we're more concerned about finding Grandpa, but also Boston. And so then they do find Grandpa. His truck ran out of gas in a place called Kaleo,
mm-hmm.
which is, if you look at Kaleo on the map, there's like 5 farmhouses.
Yeah.
That's Kaleo. And so he had stopped at some guy's farmhouse and like, hey, can you give me gas? And somehow we were able to get a hold of Grandpa and talk to the farmer and said, do not give him gas.
Yeah.
Keep him.
Keep him where he's at. Thank
we're
going to
come get him. But then that's when we found out that Boston wasn't in the truck with him.
Right.
So then, of course, we freak out and we launch this huge Facebook campaign to which, you know, by the way, we're very grateful. I think the post got shared over 400 times.
Jeez.
With people just concerned, you know, and because we were concerned because, of course, now we know he's out there in 5 degree weather. He's not a, you know, he's not a hunting dog.
Yep.
He's a house dog.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a golden doodle.
He's a golden doodle. He's not a.
Yeah.
And
it's got
so,
toenails painted and hair fluffed and bows on either ear. No, that's
no,
not true.
It's not. That's,
but sort of.
But sort of. I mean,
pampered.
He's a people. He's a people dog. So.
So then what? Right? Because it's gone. This is when you find out that he's missing.
This is
at
like
what
7
time.
O'clock at night.
Right. So it's dark here.
It would have taken us, you know, almost 2 hours to get out to Dugaway.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been pitch black. I mean, not that we wouldn't have done it, but. By the time we found out that he wasn't with Grandpa, it was kind of too late.
Right.
So then it was, well, what can we do? We can put out this. We talked to the sheriff department. They're like, you know, we'll keep an eye out, blah, 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 whatever. And so then at that point, it's like, well, we can pray. And, you know, for Levi and I, who have been, as we all know, sort of going through this
faith thing,
you know, trying to find our place in that.
Was the inclination to pray, or did someone go, have you prayed about this yet?
No, it was actually my inclination to do it, to pray. You know, I've been trying recently to connect more to whatever you want to, you know, connect to the divine,
mm-hmm.
however you want to classify mm-hmm. that. And yeah, I've been to church a couple of times and, whatnot. And so, yeah, like it was just that moment of, I think we should pray. So we knelt down and I said a prayer. And, you know, after we were done, like I just felt this extreme sense of peace just flood over me, you know.
Yeah.
And it was nice. I mean, it was short lived, as so often it is, you know, because.
Yeah, it's kind of a confirming. And then your mind takes back
yeah.
over and goes, but the dog is still missing.
Right. Well, right. Because it's like, if he's out there in 5 degree weather and we check the forecast. And of course, you know, I'm like, it's almost 50 degrees today here.
Mm-hmm.
So like, why couldn't this have happened today?
Right.
You know, but no, of course, it happens on the night that it's going to be 5 degrees with sleeting rain.
Right.
You know, and we're thinking, unless he got picked up by another hunter, there's just no way.
Right.
We're not going to find him. And of course, trying to stay positive. So the next morning, get up bright and early. We throw Daisy, the other dog, you know, into the car and we drive out to Dugaway, which, by the way, was horrifying. The weather
sure.
was horrifying. The pass that you drive through to get to Dugaway through from Tooele terrifying.
Awful.
I think I probably said no less than 15 times, this is how we die.
Yeah.
You know,
because especially with the freezing rain and that the roads are not well kept in the wintertime.
And there's that moment when you're like, for a dog. But I mean,
yeah, you'd but have, you do it. For, I mean, for those that have dogs that are like like family members, they get it.
Right. And it's funny.
That's why
too.
I won't have a dog, by the
no,
way.
Don't.
No, I won't. It's why I will not and do not have pets.
Yeah. The emotional investment. Like, I might have been less upset if someone had told me that, like, Levi was missing in the wilderness, you know.
How does that make you feel, Levi? He'll be fine.
It's not true. That's not true at all. But no. And here's the funny thing, too, is I actually thought while we were out there, I thought to myself, it's like that pioneer story that you hear the saints that were like, go and get them.
Yeah.
Right. The go out and get them. Kind
go
of.
Back and get
them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just, which is another funny part of the story. There is this random LDS church that sits right at the head of this trail to nowhere, like literally trail to desert and desolation.
And it's a functioning, still being used.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's the military bases.
Oh, yeah, probably.
You know, but so we stop in because we're like, might as well go in and just like say, hey, if any of you see a dog.
Right.
Yeah, since it's a Sunday.
Right.
And it just happens to be fast and testimony meeting. And it there just happens to be, as we walk in, this lull where no one is standing up. And I'm like, I'm going. And yeah. Just like, keep in mind, I am not showered. I am not put together. I'm wearing old, like, sweats and hoodie and look like a straight up homeless person.
So it, I mean.
Yeah.
So it's like most days.
Yeah, like most days. I tried a little bit. I look
no,
nice
you look
today.
Great today.
Yeah,
I'm kidding. I'm
today,
teasing.
No,
easy joke, low hanging fruit.
Well, but think about it. How often do you see someone like that walk into a church during sacrament meeting?
Yeah, not often.
Right. And walk up to the front, no
sure.
less.
You the know? Bishop's kind of like, what's going
yeah,
on
no,
here?
He quickly ushered us out.
Really?
Quickly. I mean, kindly, but quickly.
After you had spoken?
After I said to him, hey, would you mind if we made an announcement? And he's like, whoosh.
Yeah, no way.
I can only imagine what he thought we were going to say.
Yeah.
You know? But we told him. So anyway, we get out. So I should also mention that Levi's mother, brother, and again, grandfather are in the car behind us.
Oh, so you brought him along.
Yeah.
Well, of course. Maybe
what could go wrong?
Maybe he would remember where he left the dog out or something.
So many smart choices. So we get out there. This road is a dirt path that's completely snow covered. We're sliding everywhere. And the second that I got there and saw what we were dealing with, my heart sank.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, we're not going to find him. Either he's dead and now covered in snow and we're not going to find him, or he has run off in the vast expanse of this place, because it's just miles of nothing.
Yeah.
You know, but we're, again, trying to stay positive, but, you know.
It's hard in those kind of situations, right? Even with the confirmation or the peace that you receive, you know, to try and figure out if it's the peace being like, hey, you'll be fine.
Right.
You'll get through this, or if it's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ultimately, everything will be, quote, fine.
Right.
You know, but the odds were not.
So you're trudging.
We're trudging.
It's cold.
It's freezing. We're screaming out the window. We're trying to get Daisy to bark, but she doesn't really understand. But the heartbreaking moment of this was when we first started calling for Boston.
Uh-huh.
I think Daisy kind of caught on a little bit and she started crying. And then we started crying.
Right.
And then at one point I drove my car into a ditch.
I got stuck.
Stuck.
Yeah.
Levi's brother comes. We spend a good 15 minutes trying to push me out. We finally do. During that time, Daisy loses it and just starts barking and wailing and whatever. We come to find out after that, because the end of the story is that we meet up with the uncle who had come back to search for Boston because he felt so bad, obviously. And he had brought his son-in-law. And his son-in-law, who was in a different truck, through his binoculars, I don't know how, had spotted Boston.
Jeez.
And he said at one point, he saw Boston and he was laying down by this fence, I'm assuming just
freezing and
freezing
going, all
and
right,
giving
we're done.
Up.
We're done with this, yeah.
And he said he saw Boston's head whip up and look over in a direction and then start running.
Hmm.
And so now the question is, did he hear Daisy?
Sure.
Going crazy. And, you know, did we hit that ditch right at the right moment?
Yeah.
You know, all of these things that you can write off to coincidence, but then all of these things that you can say this happened because, again, we shouldn't have found this dog.
Right.
We shouldn't have found him, but we did.
Yeah.
And they went, and there's more of the story, but that's really, I mean, that's really the... There was more drama after the fact, family members wandering off into the wilderness for no apparent reason, and then other family members wandering off to find them, and me sure. screaming, we need to just stay here.
Yeah. What we don't need is now tomorrow to be...
Please.
So here's an interesting thing.
Okay.
And if this is too much...
it never is.
Yeah, right?
When have I ever...
So given sort of your place in this whole faith,
yeah.
you know, whatever, and then having this experience where obviously, I mean, if you give any sort of credence to faith into a divine intervention, there's right. obviously this answer and support and blessing of it, right. unless you completely write it off of coincidence. What's the takeaway for you?
I think that where I'm at right now, it's if I wanted to, like, let's look at this from like arguing this case in a court of law. Okay.
Sure.
Like, if I wanted to be a cynical jerk, I could very easily write this off.
Right.
Because in a universe of infinite possibilities, then all possibilities are possible, right? So the fact that we found him is not... We say it's impossible, but it's not.
No.
Right? So if I want to be a jerk about it, I can do that. And my rational mind, I struggle with. And this is a good way of summarizing, is that there... But there's a part of me that would feel very... ungrateful. Like, if you want to call it God, if you want to call it fate, if you want to call it the universe, and I said this to Levi last night, we were given a gift.
Yeah.
And that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Whether there was divine intervention or not, like, that was a gift to get our dog back, to yeah. get our kid back.
Yeah.
That might be the closest I ever come to having a child, honestly.
Yeah.
And so... And the thing is, it's like, and I'll share this with you because I feel like it's appropriate given the setting. My mom mentioned that she had gone to the temple a few days prior and was like specifically praying for Levi and I to find our way,
mm-hmm.
you know, to have something happen that would open our eyes, quote. And so she actually started crying because she felt like she had done this. And I'm like, let's not get too.
Yeah.
Yeah. God stranded our dog so that, you know. But the thing is, it's not that God makes those things happen, if that's how it works, is that here was an opportunity,
mm-hmm.
right? And we asked and we received. And so I guess, I don't know, like, I'm just grateful right now. That's
sure.
all. I just have gratitude. And I want to give that gratitude to whoever deserves it.
Right.
You know, like, because truly, I just... So, yeah, I don't know. And I think Levi probably feels similar, right? I mean, we talked about it. He's nodding his head. Levi's yeah. over here in the corner in yeah. a much tinier chair yeah. than what we're sitting
we
in.
We put him in the little chair.
He's in a small chair. We're in a not-so-small chair. So, yeah, I guess that would be did that answer it, or was that vague still?
No, I mean, it's vague, but I think that maybe you don't know yet.
Yeah, maybe that's it. But it's certainly worth... considering that this, you know, that this is a moment
mm-hmm.
of God saying, hey.
Hey. Hello. Hey. Hello. Yeah.
Like,
hi.
You asked this. I gave this to you. You think maybe you could try praying more often or,
yeah.
you know.
Or I'm here still, right?
Yeah. yeah.
Gentle reminder, gentle nudge.
Right.
The other takeaway from that is like, hey, Mom, next time you're going to pray about something like this, give me a heads up.
Yeah.
Because I had stuff this weekend. I really could
have. I did. And now I probably have a cold. Yep. Like, I had just gotten over a cold, and I'm pretty sure I'm getting sick again because of this. And so, as a funny aside, the grandfather at one point got left alone in mm-hmm. in the second vehicle and did, in fact, try to take the car again. But Levi and I put a quick...
So let's not let
and
Grandpa
firm stop to that.
Let's just let him.
Let's not. Levi says there may have been vulgarities.
Yeah. You're going to need to get a picture so that we can share it on Instagram and Facebook.
Of Boston.
Of Boston now. Yeah. The recovered Boston.
The recovered Boston in his blue blanket,
yes.
looking all wet and
yeah.
pathetic. Like it. Yeah. And then the picture of Daisy with her arm around him as
yeah.
we drove home.
Yes.
Break your heart.
Make sure we get it. so that we can share it. And follow us. That's a good reminder for people. Follow us at The Cultural Hall. You can find us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. You can find us on Instagram at The Cultural Hall, Pinterest, Facebook, all the things. You can find us there. Especially most recently, I've noticed with our Instagram, Anna and Jenny who run that, and then with our Twitter, and that's Madison who's running that. Amazing job being done there. So if you don't follow us on those social medias, you know, for me, the big thing has been the show, which you and I are both in, Indiana Bones.
I mean,
and the Raiders of Walmart. Is that what it's called?
I don't know. We're going to get sued. So.
It opened last Thursday. And I am single cast, so I'm the only person playing Indiana Bones. So that's 9 shows a week, baby.
You're insane.
A little insane.
That and this and your day job and literally tearing your house down brick by brick.
Well, I'm not taking the bricks down. Everything else. It's a lot for sure. Yeah. But it's a cool experience. I've never, in all the time that I've been acting, I've never been a lead and I've never been single cast in anything.
I was going to say, you're like me in the sense that we never get the dashing leading.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, it's called an ingenue. I don't know what the male equivalent of ingenue, or it's still ingenue.
It's male genue.
It's a mongenue.
A mangenue.
No, but it's true, right? We always get the bit parts, which I'm playing in this again.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a monkey.
Yeah.
Like literally a monkey.
Monkey girl,
monkey
technically.
Trans species.
Yeah.
Like, the political correct. And so, but it's cool. Like I actually was thinking this the other night as I was watching you on stage. I'm like, it's about time. Like it really is about time that Richie was given this. Because you do well.
Thank you.
You can command.
I don't feel like
whatever.
I do well yet, but I appreciate that you would say that.
Comparative to the rest of us who are also not memorized a week and a half into this opening.
Listen, I'm plenty memorized. Don't. I mean, you're right, but.
No, it's fine. No, but I think you're doing, for what it's worth, like, I think you're doing a phenomenal job. And I'm actually kind of glad that there's not another person. Like, I'm glad that it's going to be consistently you.
Yeah, that's
nice
of you to say.
Through this run. So.
Yeah. And then the other thing, so now going flipping over to my house, I have someone who starts living in my house tomorrow. So if people, we've posted a couple of pictures on our Instagram, but if you follow me on social media, it's Richie T. Stedman. I've posted videos and pictures of it. It's so terrible, and I feel so bad.
There's no
way. But I have a tenant in my basement now.
Is the basement torn apart the way that everything else is torn apart?
No, it's not. Own bathroom. Bedroom not touched at all.
On a scale of 0 to burn it to the ground, how many spiders do you imagine are living
in
your home?
You know, here's the deal. So people have been like, what kind of crap house did you buy? Here's the deal. It's actually really great.
Yeah.
But for me and for what I want, because either I'm going to sell it or I'm going to live in it.
Yes, and that's usually what people do with their home.
Well, no, because sometimes people will rent it out.
Okay, sure.
You know,
all right, fine.
There's lots of options.
Fair enough.
But I want it to be of a quality that I'll like living in it, right? And there's enough little quirky things that I just was like, you know what? I can try and live with this, or I can strip it down and have it be the way that I want it to be, or the way that someone else will want it to be if I decide to sell it.
Right, which is probably the smarter of the two.
Maybe.
You know.
So, like the bathroom, I've ripped out literally every wall, every fixture, everything like that. In fact, that's why I've got the bruise on my eye, the house one the other day. But have just been ripping it down. I found that there was a faux ceiling in my kitchen. So now I knocked out that ceiling, and then there's another ceiling that's 1.5 feet higher. So it's way greater space and looks way better. And I don't understand why people would do that, right?
Right? Like back in the... it's the same thing with like the hardwood floors, right? But that's even more ridiculous. Like I could see like fashion-wise hardwood just not being in.
Right.
Like, oh, carpet. Because now everyone is buying these old homes. And what's the first thing they do?
They tear out the carpet and find the hardwood.
And find the beautiful hardwood floors underneath. But a low ceiling?
Doesn't make sense. Fun to rip out. Really messy to clean up. So it's just sort of been an adventure. But now I feel like this tremendous amount of pressure because I have a tenant in the basement and I want to get things done so that...
Spiders.
Yeah, no spiders.
Yet.
And the furnace works great. It's actually a really great house. Walls are great.
Yeah.
you know, foundation is great. It has all sorts of, I have a carpenter studio and a new studio that we'll do the podcast from in the back.
Oh, that would be
cool. A tree house.
A tree house?
And a woodshed and a greenhouse. I've got tremendous potential in this home, and maybe I'll sell it. But, yeah, it just takes so much time. It's not even hard. It just takes so much time.
And you're doing it by yourself is the thing.
So far.
But you are bringing in contractors to, you're
to
tearing
rebuild
down,
it.
They're
I'll tear
rebuild.
It down, they'll build it up.
Yeah.
So the tearing down is kind of fun.
Right. Something very masculine, I'm sure, about taking a sledgehammer to things.
Well, masculine, but also like really stress relieving.
Cathartic.
Right? Where it's just like, yeah, you know what?
Right.
Take that. And really rewarding because you go, this looks like this. Smash, smash, smash. Now it looks like this. Look at that. I affect change.
And a workout, too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what you need right now.
Yeah.
That is more
exactly
physical exhaustion. Like, that's what Richie needs in his life.
Anyway, so that's what's going on. That we'll get some more episodes of Articles of News later this week, hopefully, and try and get caught up. I know a lot of people have been like, hey, what's going on? I know the last episode was in December, and I apologize about that. But yes, we still are doing this. We're going to come back in just a second and do some actual Articles of News. So hang on.
Hi, this is Dan the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. You know, at PC Laptops, we can fix your broken screen on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. We can fix most phones in less than 15 minutes. Not days or even hours, but in most cases, 15 minutes or less. How awesome is that? 15 minutes or less? That's right. Here's how it works. Bring in your broken iPhone, iPad, or Android device. We'll fix your phone while you enjoy a refreshing, complimentary beverage and snack, in most cases, in under 15 minutes. It's easy and painless. Bring your broken phones and iPads into any one of our 8 locations right now, or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE, or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com, where we can fix your broken screen on your phones and tablets in less than 15 minutes. So visit us right now at PCLaptops.com.
Utah's newest upscale catering company is now accepting bookings for the upcoming holiday and wedding season. Slick Rock Catering masterfully combines exquisite food, beautiful presentation, high-level service, and careful attention to create a special occasion that will be remembered. From award-winning food, event planning, decorating, to providing highly trained servers, Slick Rock Catering will help you make your next special event a huge success. Contact them at slickrockcatering.com.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. 1 in 5 children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
Time for the second half of Articles of News, wherein we do actual Articles of News. Hit it, Peter.
You can't lose Articles of News.
I've got a bunch, and you've got some that we haven't really talked about.
I've got a bunch, and you have a few.
You have some?
You said, I got a bunch.
And you have some. Look, how many do you have? Count them right now.
Like
and
four?
And I'll illustrate my point as to why I have some.
Four.
I'm already up to 7.
Wow. You've got, like, actual paper.
I've got that. Well, I like to do the crinkle up at the end of the story.
Oh, that's right. The catharsis.
The catharsis?
The Cthulhu of...
I don't feel like that's a word.
Cthulhu is a word.
I feel like you're making stuff up.
And you're going to have the whole nerd community writing
what
you angry
Cthulhu?
Letters. Cthulhu is a mythological creature.
Okay. Yeah. No, I stand corrected. Thank you for the mythological creature. How dare I?
How dare you?
Why don't I go ahead and start a couple of deaths that we haven't mentioned. Elder Glenn L. Rudd, who was, quote, Mr. Welfare, he wrote the book... Pure Religion, the Story of the Church Welfare Since 1930. He passed away. This is now a couple of weeks ago. He was the oldest living man who had served as a general authority, 70 of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He passed away Friday, December 30th, from complications after breaking his hip. He was the manager of the Welfare Square for 25 years. He also had special ties to the LDS Church in New Zealand. He served there first as a missionary in 1938. He returned 27 more times.
Wow.
As an advisor on the Labor Missionary Project that built the New Zealand Temple, the Church College of New Zealand, the president of the New Zealand Wellington Mission, as well as president of the Hamilton New Zealand Temple, and as an area president there. So that's one gentleman who passed away. And then Mormon leader Bruce Porter, a member of one of the governing bodies, he was an existing member of the Quorum of the 70,
okay,
so not emeritus. He died of a pulmonary infection. He was only 64 years old. Church spokesman Eric Hawkins says Porter was released in December from his assignment as president of the church's Europe East area and assigned to serve at the church headquarters in Salt Lake. He was a professor of political science at BYU and was a research fellow at Harvard before joining the general authorities. He was born in Albuquerque back in 1952 and leaves behind his wife and four children. So not, I mean, 64, that's my dad's age.
That my sister-in-law, actually, her brother had a heart infection recently. Young guy.
Yeah.
Totally healthy. Like, so that's the second time now I've heard of heart infections. It's, I don't know.
And you'll hear it again.
At least one more time, right?
Well, yeah. What's the story you got?
Let's go with another really positive story. Mormon growth slowing in the U.S. In 2016, Mormonism saw a steady and occasional impressive congregational growth. In Africa, Asia, Central America, but slowing down, but a slowdown in new wards in the U.S. I don't think that this is, what, the world?
It's just the blinds in the other room. Don't worry about
it.
Okay. No stress. People can't hear that. People think you just stopped for no reason.
It's the end of days. But, and this is nothing new, right? I mean, we kind of know that in the U.S., the church is sort of slowing down, but outside of the U.S., it continues to increase. I mean, it's got some percentages here. Apparently, the Utah-based faith showed a net increase in the U.S. of only 69 congregations during the year, a 0.49% annual increase, and a significantly smaller increase than most recent years. Typically, the church has reported an annual net increase of 100 to 150 wards, which is a growth rate of 0.8% to 1.2%. They attribute it to a drop in membership and
fewer baptisms,
fewer
reduced
baptisms,
birth rate, and inactivity among young single adults.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm not part of the problem. No, I am part of the problem, not the solution. So, but yeah, so I don't know that that's necessarily news.
Well, I mean, it's, they'll have the full statistical report at General Conference in April that we'll be able to compare it to.
But here's my question, though, because I've heard that when the church does their stats, mm-hmm, they go based off of people,
memberships,
like the records.
Sure.
So if you're not going to church anymore, but you haven't pulled your records, then
you're still counted
count
as a member. Sure. But they get, but it would still statistically move. It would be an uptick and a lesser uptick.
Yeah.
Because we're not, like, we'd have to have more members join the church in order for it to go up at all. Does that make sense?
Otherwise, it would stagnate.
Yeah, it would stagnate.
Yeah.
Or go down if people are having their name removed.
Right, sure. Okay.
Another death. God, jeez, what's my deal today?
I don't know.
Lavelle Edwards.
But Boston's
alive. That was a big deal.
Yes, sad.
Former and legendary BYU football coach Lavelle Edwards, former guest of the Cultural Hall. He is the College Football Hall of Famer, known for pioneering offense. Because he did the, this was interesting. I was listening to the reason why, because he's notorious for being a passing coach, right? Typically in college football for a long time, it was a lot of running, right? Not a tremendous amount of passing.
If you say so.
But when you think of BYU, you think of like your Ty Detmers and these amazing seasons where it's pass yards upon pass yards upon pass yards. And the reason why Lavelle Edwards did that is when he went to be a coach at BYU, coaches were only sticking around for a couple of years. He ended up being there for, I want to say, 27 years?
Mm-hmm.
Nope, 29 years. But when he went there, he's like, we're going to pass because you know what? I'll probably lose this job anyway. So we just
because
designed,
he had nothing to lose.
Yeah,
right?
So he's just like, you know what? Let's try a whole different thing. People said of Lavelle Edwards, he had a pure heart. He was the dream coach of every parent. His example will be forever with me, and I will strive to live a life of love as he did. That's Tom Holmoe, the athletic director at BYU. He's one of the top 10 winningest coaches in football, football bowl subdivision history. He was more than a coach, said BYU coach now, Kalani Sitake, who played fullback under Edwards. For a man who has accomplished so much, it's important that Lavelle Edwards is never defined as just a coach. He's a great person and has had an influence on so many lives, mine included. He started coaching at Granite High School, which I don't know that a lot of people know that.
Grant or Graham?
Granite.
Granite
High School here in Salt Lake, which is now being torn down to make homes.
Oh, I thought you were about to say a bigger Granite High School.
Nope. And then he was coach at BYU when they received their first ever bowl invitation, the 1974 Fiesta Bowl. And then for 27 straight non-losing seasons, 22 bowl appearances, and 20 league titles, he was the coach.
And now they're terrible.
You know, they were better this year. Same record as the University of Utah.
Were they?
Yeah.
But they lost to the University of Utah.
Yeah. And the teams that University of Utah was playing are a lot more difficult teams. But.
Yeah. I have no doubt that they will become a great team again.
Yeah. Like, give them a break for a minute.
Yeah, they will. If, you know, their players can show some sportsmanship. I don't know. Yeah. Everything I know about sports are sound bites.
I like when you talk sports. Let's go to another article.
Okay, so this is going to be real quick. Mormons in Congress mirror percentage in U.S. population. Here's the punchline, everyone. Wait for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mormons, including all six members of Utah's delegation, will make up about 2.4% of Congress, while generally Latter-day Saints make up about 2% of American adults. That's the story.
So the six from Utah are all LDS. Does it list who the other ones are? I know Jeff Flake from Arizona is Mormon.
Let's see.
Harry Reid, obviously, from Nevada, Mormon. Probably some of the guys from up in Idaho, Mormon.
So...
because I'm doing some quick math right now, so...
Right.
If there's 100 senators and 365, 68 representatives, that's 468. So in order to have, so 10% of them would be 46. So 5 into 4, so there's got to be 9.
You just did more math than they did.
There's got to be like between 9 and 11 reps or senators that are LDS.
But they're just talking about Congress.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Senators and House of Representatives is what makes up Congress.
Yeah.
So if it's 100 and then 368 or so.
You literally just did more work than they did.
Hmm.
So
between 9 and 11.
But they said that a third of the House members are Catholic, while about a quarter of the senators are. A third of the House members, while about a quarter of the senators are.
Yeah, so a quarter of the senators, so 25 of the 100 senators are Catholic.
Yeah.
And then of the House of Representatives, so there's...
And Mormons make up 6% of the Senate, but only 2% of the House.
Huh.
So.
6% of the Senate, so there's 6 senators that are LDS. So Flake, the 2 from Utah, Flake. Harry Reid, probably someone from back east that we don't know about, and then someone from Idaho or California.
What? Congratulations to Senator Flake for making it that far. I don't know how you successfully managed a campaign with your last name being Flake.
He's a handsome gentleman.
Oh, is that it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
No, that's credible. Like, if he's really good looking. Look, we all know that if you give your kid a weird name, but he's really attractive, all of a sudden that weird name makes him even more attractive.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But if your kid's name is Cornelius and he's really weird looking.
That's that weird kid, Cornelius.
I actually love the name Cornelius, but that's...
You would.
I know. Your turn.
Ready for lists? Everybody loves lists.
Yep.
Bada, everybody loves lists. That's my own jingle.
It's terrible.
3 things that every Mormon mom needs to hear at the start of a new year.
Oh, no.
Number 1.
It gets better.
There was no beauty in Christ. At the start of the new year, you may feel like it's time to make some resolutions. Well, making and keeping worthy goals help you be a healthy mama. Desperately striving after perfectionism will only drain and distract you. Consider this scripture from Isaiah about Jesus Christ. When we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. In today's modern world, we often seek after an ideal and beautiful version of life. You see perfectly curated homes and cute vintage clothed children on social media and Pinterest. You get loads of advice from everyone around you what type of mother you should be. Yet, we need to remember the way the world defines beauty and success is very different from God's definition. Number two, it's never too late to start again. With that being said, it's never too late to progress and grow in motherhood. Maybe you look back on the past year or years and you feel like you failed. You can always make the choice to start becoming the person and the mother that you'd like to be.
No pressure.
Well, I think there's something valid to it, right? Like,
I've
messed up my New Year's resolutions and it's the 9th of January. I guess I'll wait till next year. No, start tomorrow.
Well, no, that's psychology, right?
Right.
It's like if you mess up once, that's not a reason to mess up harder or to give up entirely. That's just...
But human nature would tell you differently.
Correct. And that's why so many resolutions don't work. That's why diets don't work. That's why a lot of things don't work. Because people think if I mess up once, then it's all ruined and I might as well not try.
Right.
Yeah. Silliness.
Number three, motherhood impacts the world. Motherhood isn't glamorous. It doesn't often command the respect of the world. It's dirty, exhausting, soul-altering work. On the days where you feel like giving up, it is important for you to know that what you do changes the world.
Literally.
That's not to put pressure on you or make you feel like you've been given an impossible task. It's a reminder that what you do is important and that God is on your side. He knows you. He knows what you do is essential to bring about his ultimate purpose, the exaltation of his children.
Here's the thing, and this has become more apparent to me after stepping away from the church. And I can say this having no dog in the fight, mm-hmm. you know, so to speak. This whole concept of like a lot of our societal ills are due to the breakdown in the family. I know that's a really popular Mormon soundbite, right? Because there's that.
Proclamation, yeah, and sort of a warning within that, right?
Right. Wasn't it President Hinckley that said no success in the world can make up for failure in the home?
No, not President Hinckley. It was, it wasn't President Hinckley.
Was it Monson?
Think right. No. No.
Okay.
No.
Are you sure it wasn't Hinckley?
I'll look it up while you keep talking.
So the point being, this idea, this concept that, you know, like someone say, well, she's just a mother. That's nonsense. Or even just a father. I mean, like, let's not equal. That's
David
equally
O. McKay
as important.
Was who
oh,
said
okay.
That.
David O. McKay. But that's equally as important, you know, and that's why this list is good, but it applies to everyone.
Sure.
Like, it's not just mothers, but it's nice that they, you know, directed it towards mothers. But mothers and fathers, I mean.
People, I think, in general, regardless, you're not a mother and you could benefit from everything I just said.
Well, but here's the thing. Like, let's say that I never have children.
Right. But what you do matters.
But the people that the children that you're raising still affect my world.
Right. And the effect that you have on children, your nieces and nephews.
Right. Which we just welcomed a new nephew into our home.
Congratulations.
About 2 weeks ago.
Nice.
So, and you know, and it's not an ideal situation. I'll just say that.
Right.
And
you can help tremendously in that situation.
Right. And we plan on it because it's like, you know, I think people discredit that these days and it's really sad. Like, and I'm quite frankly, like, you know, pretty sick and tired of my friends who, you know, are advocating for no children. I mean, if you don't have children, that's fine. You know, there's plenty of reasons.
Right.
But for people who, like, downplay the importance of good parenting and they like to write it off to all these other things, you're like, oh, no, it's this. It has nothing to do with terrible parenting. It's like,
it has something to do with terrible parenting.
You know, or conversely, when you have a really successful person.
Yeah, some of it has to do with good parenting.
Some of it probably has to do with good parenting. Anyway.
Where do we want? I'll go here. Let's go this one. For Arizona husband and wife. I hate stories like this. Blake and Natasha Johnson, they're working together to raise their 5-year-old twins. They're members of the church, and they recently combined their talents to create the LDS animated app for mobile devices. The app puts well-known primary songs like I Am a Child of God and Love is Spoken Here to animation with the lyrics appearing at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever been to the primary program where it's like, I see family, right? Like all the kids sort of know the words, or one kid finally clues into the words. They don't know all this. This app helps teach kids visually the songs for primary. The app was launched in September, currently features 7 different primary songs, including the hits, I'm Trying to Be Like Jesus, I Will Follow God's Plan, I Know Who I Am, I Know God's Plan, I'll Follow Him in Faith, I think is that one.
And now back to the easy listening classics.
Each song is animated with different scenes or stories and scrolls through the lyrics in a sing-along style. There's I Love to See the Temple, I Am a Child of God.
What is your favorite primary hymn, Richie?
I think I was singing it just a minute ago. Love is Spoken Here, right? Is that the one that I like? I don't know actually what it's called, but I think the one that I like is the one that is always done with like a male and female duet.
Oh,
the one
is
that's
it,
like,
is it the
pray,
Heavenly Father?
Yeah.
Are you
He is there.
Yeah.
Speak.
I think
he
that's
is
everyone's
listening. Right? It really is so great.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite.
I don't know if this one got added after I was a kid, but I certainly don't remember singing it as a kid. It was the, if the Savior stood beside me, da-na-na-na-na-na-na, which I only heard as an adult.
Right.
I think it must have been added after, because that's kind of my favorite now, but I never sang it as a kid.
But I mean, as a kid.
Would I have liked, I don't.
As a kid, though, like I know my favorite one was Book of Mormon Stories
that
my teacher
told
me.
Or Sunbeam, because then you got to like sit up.
Yeah.
A Sunbeam. Beep.
Yeah. Yeah, anything that I could make obnoxious, for sure. They plan to add, the Johnsons, that is, they plan to add a video for each of the 7 songs that will be used during the 2017 primary sacrament meeting presentation. They hope this will help children learn and comprehend not only the lyrics in the song, but also the messages. So it is called LDS Animated. I'm not sure if it's a free app. I would bet that you're probably paying just a little bit for it, but get your ward to pay for it.
And now I'm going to go create one for the adult hymns, because I feel like that will be largely successful.
Could be.
It might. I don't know.
I'm just reading. The Johnsons said that it now takes about a month to animate a new song, a month full of very long days and nights. But it's not just Blake who creates the final product. Together, they decide on a song and start brainstorming the story they want the images to portray. So it's kind of a fun thing for a husband and wife to do together.
Just because I'm a horrible person, like, I want the animations to be like so crude that they're disturbing.
No,
it's crude, like offensive. You know what I'm saying? Crude as in primitive.
It's pretty gorgeous.
Is it?
Yeah, they do a pretty good job with it.
I wonder if they're the ones animating, or if they hired someone to do that. Or if that's one of, you know, like, did the husband or wife do the animation?
Mm-hmm. No, that's what it is. The two of them do the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Like,
so
he codes
they didn't
it,
hire
and she
a graphic
draws,
artist.
And he draws, and yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, good for them.
Way to go, Johnson's from Arizona. What do you got?
Mormons in the Piazza. Not
it's
to be
book,
confused
right?
with Lights in the Piazza.
Well, similar, I guess.
Maybe. Yes, a book for $39.99, 632 pages.
Oh, my gosh.
By James A. Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why was that word so hard?
Don't know.
Eric D. Durstler and Michael W. Homer. Homer is an easy name.
Yeah, you got that one.
BYU Religious Studies Centers and Deseret Book for $34.99. So it's a book about Mormons. A History of the Latter-day Saints in Italy. It gives a little bit of information here. This is interesting. Missionaries first began preaching the gospel in Italy in 1850 in an effort led by Lorenzo Snow. There was a great deal of excitement about preaching the gospel in lands with ties to the 12 apostles in the New Testament. I mean, obviously, Italy, Rome, I mean, that's
Catholic.
The heart of the Catholic.
Yeah.
Church.
Well, and I think that this is kind of a precursor, because the temple in Italy will get dedicated fairly soon. And it's a compound there in Rome.
Yeah.
So there's the temple and a hotel for Mormons to stay in while they're going to the temple.
Yeah.
It's not like a, you know, full, it's, I think it's sort of boutique-y.
Yeah.
Smaller scale, but places for people to stay and to be able to go do the work there.
Yeah. I mean, which would be I mean, how incredible would that be?
You know? Right? Going on a little Italian vacation, going to hit up the temple just to get...
just for funsies. But it said a number of issues eventually resulted in missionaries leaving the country for nearly a century.
Yep.
So it was closed to us.
Yeah. You know, you'd be surprised,
though.
It made
people angry.
I mean, places like that, you know, there are a lot of countries who have never been open to it, but there were a lot of countries that, you know, we've been in, and then they said, yeah, nope, we're done.
Yeah, and who, you know, for a number of reasons, I'm sure, that
even here
weren't
in the
entirely our fault.
Even here in the States, they didn't put missionaries back in Kirtland, Ohio until the late 70s.
Yeah.
1970s.
Huh. I actually did not know that.
Yeah.
The LDS Church received formal legal status in 1993, and missionaries returned. Bit by bit, the membership strengthened and grew to more than 25,000, with a temple under construction. So the authors place a special focus on the perspective of Italians and provide a number of reasons for growth of in the church in Italy, including a shifting constellation of factors that include spiritual appeal, politics, a capacity for adaptation, and individual religious proclivities. So that's a book.
It's a big old book, though. 630 something pages.
You know what? If they put it on Audible, I will for sure listen to it. I would be fascinated. I love historical stuff. Like, yeah. So, there you go.
The president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, President Thomas S. Monson, will not appear at a scheduled deposition next week to answer questions about sex abuse allegations in a church-run program, lawyers wrote in court documents. This is kind of an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
They've tried to subpoena President Monson to appear at a deposition. And the church has said, yeah, we're not. He's not going to be there. Four people are suing the LDS Church, accusing it of not doing enough to stop the alleged abuse in the Lamanite Placement Program or the Indian Student Placement Program. They allege that in the 60s and 70s, they were taken out of their homes on the Navajo Reservation, baptized into the Mormon faith, and then placed in homes in Utah. Some of the plaintiffs identified in court documents only by their initials claim that they report abuse. But nothing, they reported abuse, but nothing was done about it. Lawyers for both the plaintiffs and the LDS Church are going to different judges to either compel the deposition or quash it altogether. Participating in a deposition would create an undue burden, plaintiff's lawyer Billy Keeler wrote. He said even if they offered to remove a document demand, the LDS Church refused to have President Monson participate in the deposition. They asked the judge to order the church leader to sit for a deposition on Monday or within 30 days. So it's just sort of a fight back and forth. They hope to get an ultimate decision here fairly soon. Right. The only connection that President Monson has to the case is that he happened to be a senior leader of the LDS Church during the time period plaintiffs alleged they were abused. So it's not that... It's
right.
Not that he is being accused of any sort of abuse or any of that, but just being a leader.
Right. It's guilt by association. But I mean, and I'm not a law doctor, mm-hmm. but I do play one on TV.
Sure.
I think that in order, you know, you need to have, they would need to have something that showed that he had knowledge of what was going on.
Right.
You know, or knowledge of someone who had knowledge of what was going on. Because otherwise, I mean, that's like someone broke a glass in a house down the block, but because you're friends with them, they call you to testify. You know, this is not to say that the abuse didn't happen. It very well might have. And if someone turned a blind eye to it, then mm-hmm. those people need to be held accountable.
Absolutely.
But I mean, I agree that he doesn't need to be part of that if he has no connection to it. Like, well, that just seems like, I don't know.
And some would say, speculate that they're just trying to get, well, the president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was in court for a deposition, right? Like, some people won't look beyond the headline of that.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I would have to do more research on this story because from both ends, it's like, this looks like it could be a smear campaign or the attempt right. of a smear campaign. And then I'm sure on the other side, people could say, well, this looks like a cover-up because so many of the members, because so many people in power here are members. That, you know, it's like, well, regardless if they had evidence, they still wouldn't call him kind of thing because they're above the law. The church is above the law here, which I don't
subscribe to that either.
Right. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
I'm sure people on both sides, it's just conspiracy and whatnot.
It's interesting to me. The article quotes President Monson being in guarded health. So I thought that's interesting because you don't see him publicly very often.
No.
You see him at general conference, and beyond that, it is the apostles
right.
taking care of most everything else.
There's talk that he's not well.
Yeah, both mentally speaking and
right.
physically.
Right.
And you don't need to look any further than general conference to recognize that it's like, oh my gosh.
Sure.
Are we all right?
But the church hasn't made some sort of statement, though, right? I mean, as far as I know, I think we would have heard that.
I want to get to the Mormon Tabernacle inauguration.
Why don't you do that? Because the last story I had, I was reading through it, and I think it's combative, so I don't really want to share it.
Okay. Let me share just a couple of things then real quick, and then we'll share some of these other ones later this week. The new anti-terrorism law in Russia goes as follows, and this will be important because it's about LDS missionaries. It requires cellular and internet providers to store all communications data for 6 months and all metadata for 3 years in the interests of security services. Cryptographic backdoors are mandatory in all messaging applications, which means they have to be able to get into it. Proselyting, preaching, praying, or disseminating religious materials outside of specially designated places is banned, except for the Russian Orthodox Church. And failure to report to law enforcement authorities that someone else has been planning, is perpetrating, or has perpetrated certain types of crime is criminal. This talks about Elder Hemrick, who's been serving in Russia since February of 2015. Says, when we got there, we did the normal thing. We walk around, talk to people. We found hundreds of people that were interested. The Russians are instinctively not very trusting of foreign folk, but that all changed last July when the new anti-terrorism law went into effect. Proselyting apparently was viewed as terrorism by the government. Missionaries found themselves up against a wall. According to the law, which I already read to you, disobeying can lead to fines of $760 per missionary and $15,500 for the denomination. Missionaries can also be deported, which happened to some of the people in Hemrick's group. We're allowed to strike up friendly conversations, he says, but not much else. He's a freshman in biology from BYU in Salt Lake. Says that prior to the law, he and the missionaries were able to get 5 to 10 people a month interested in learning about Mormonism. Now they're lucky if they get one or two. The church will honor, sustain, and obey the law. Missionaries will remain in Russia and will work within the requirements of these changes. The church will further study and analyze the law and its impact as it goes into effect. Hemrick believes the Russian Orthodox Church was directly involved in getting the anti-religion clause added to the bill or law. They're highly active in the government. This law is but another weapon in the hands of neo-Soviet Russians, state to dismantle and destroy our church in a way that appears lawful to Western observers and critics. Hemrick says none of the missionaries believed that the law would pass before the official vote. Once it went into effect, we were in limbo, not knowing what to do, but they decided what you do is do the same thing you did before, be friendly with the people. He's still in contact with some of his fellow missionaries in Russia, says they've adapted to the new situation, so he must be home now. Things are going pretty well for them, and they're still meeting with Russians that are interested in Mormonism. They're gaining speed and seeing some progress. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Just have to be friendly.
We believe in being subject to kings, rulers, magistrates.
So do we go sort of weird for the last story, or do we? I think we go weird for the last story, and then we'll go sort of the big controversy first. So the inauguration, right? People have come down on all sides of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir accepting the invitation to perform at President Trump's inauguration.
President-elect Trump's.
President-elect Trump's inauguration.
We still have time.
And it's been a huge deal, and we haven't really weighed in on it. In fact, we haven't weighed in on it at all. And, you know, this big story from the Salt Lake Tribune, this is now about a week old, a singer says that she regrets not one bit her decision to quit the Mormon Tabernacle Choir over its upcoming performance at the inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump. I totally understand the position of the church and the choir. They are goodwill ambassadors to send hope and love and support to others regardless of political party, and I understand that. said Jan Chamberlain in a CNN interview. She resigned from the choir after it announced December 22nd that it would sing at the 20th of January inauguration of Trump and President-elect Mike Pence. She posted on Facebook a message about her resignation, saying she could, quote, never throw roses to Hitler, and I certainly never could sing for him. What I'm seeing, she goes on, is that this goes far beyond any past inaugural situation. I'm seeing very similar parallels of fascism, Chamberlain told CNN. You have someone that finds a cause that gains people's trust and sympathy, and then they find a target to attack and use propaganda to make that look legitimate. They find their military and their financial support, and then they're off and going. As of this last Monday, 34,000 people had signed a petition at change.org to asking the choir to cancel its performance. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which sponsors the choir, has pointed to nonpartisan democratic principles as reasons for accepting the inaugural invitation. So,
couple of questions.
Yes.
First question. Were members of the choir given the option not to perform?
Yes.
So she didn't have to quit.
No.
It wasn't perform or we will
exactly. Nope.
Release
it was,
you. Because it's not a job. They can't fire.
No, but it is a calling.
Right. So they could have released her, but
they could have released her.
But that wasn't the case.
Nope. It was, hey, this is what's going on and the opportunity is extended.
Does that apply for every performance, I assume? It's like, hey, or is it like maybe it...
I think it applies for every performance, but I think there's... They ask that you do a certain amount, like 70% a year.
Yeah, right, okay.
So you're not the guy that's in the choir that's like, I'm totally in the choir.
And you're there once.
I'm not going to be there.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the first question. So she could have just said, I'm not going to this performance.
Right.
Okay, so then I have to just assume that her stance is, if the group would do this, then I don't want to be part of that group anymore.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of a she's making a statement.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously she's making a statement, but it's more just her saying, like, I will not be part of an organization that
would
that
go
this.
And do this for this type of person.
But and OK, I mean, all right, great, you know, I guess. But she still belongs to the church that sponsors the group that's doing the thing. So It almost seems like she's just lost an opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Like, it seems odd.
So it'd be an interesting thing, and maybe it's something that I reach out to her and get the opportunity to talk, because there is some dissonance, right?
Right.
If the church that you adhere to says, hey, this is a thing that we're going to do, and you're saying, boy, I am fundamentally against this.
Right.
I mean, does it go deeper than just the choir performing?
Well, and it's like the
Here's the other thing, and I'll say this now. I don't begrudge it to her, right?
No.
If she doesn't want to do it, if she feels it's not according to her conscience,
yeah,
okay. And that has been the thing for me. That
right.
I guess why I haven't seen it as that big of a deal. Not to dismiss anyone's concerns, and I know that there are a lot of people that don't like Donald Trump. I am certainly among those who don't particularly care for him. I don't give a tremendous amount of power to an individual. I hope that the governor is not, or the government rather, is not controlled by a particular person. There's certainly a figurehead, right. But I would hope that there are enough checks and balances that our country doesn't function based solely on what he tweets, or even by those people who he selects. But I know that certainly has an influence, and I know that having a poor figurehead, in some respects, if I can assign him that value,
right,
or damaging, or certainly divisive, if nothing else,
right,
can have effect. But beyond that, the church has performed at other inaugurations, so I go, okay, yep, both Democratic and Republican inaugurations.
Have they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Six other, as I understand.
Okay, well then, yeah. I mean,
and so for me, I go, yeah, they give you the option. You don't want to do it.
Sure.
Okay. And then even to the point where she's like, I'm resigning because I can't support that. Okay. You can stand on stand up to that pulpit or that soapbox or whatever it is.
Sure.
And you bet.
Right.
You bet. You've got a voice and you're in a position where you can say that. And that's great. And some people can rally with you and say, yeah, you tell them, sister. And other people will say, that was excessive.
Right. And I think from her perspective, I mean, like, as they said in the article, like, throwing flowers at Hitler, right?
Right.
So I'm sure her point of view is, well, we might have sung at other inaugurations, or whatever, but those people weren't Trump.
Right.
You know, but here's the thing, and this is where I kind of come down on all of this, is I don't like politicians in general.
Right.
Like, in the sense that I don't think that you get that far without stepping on a few people or doing some things that are maybe questionable ethically, or you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So I'm pretty confident that any president that has ever been elected has as many skeletons in their closet, if not more, and have done things that are just as deplorable. The difference being they are better spoken. They've got better PR yep. wranglers, and they have more poise than right. Trump has. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the difference between a wolf and then a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Right.
Like, Trump might be a wolf, but he's openly wolf.
Right.
You know, whereas all these other politicians are wolves in sheep clothing, which, I don't know, you pick, which is worse. I don't know, you know. And I'm sure people are going to be like, you don't know anything about politics. That's just my opinion.
Sure.
And so I'm with you in the sense that it's like, yeah, go sing if you want. Like, it's, you know.
But you know, conversely, and to stand up for her, I'm glad that she stood up for what
sure.
she didn't feel like she could do. Yes.
Sure.
Way to go, Jan.
Yeah. Right.
Awesome.
Right.
You didn't feel, because on that side of it, I would hate for someone to go and do something that they felt morally opposed to.
Right.
But because you, Jan, feel morally opposed to something doesn't mean that I have to feel morally opposed to something.
Right. And isn't that kind of like the kind of crux of our the issue of our society right now is that like we're not allowed to have two differing opinions on it without it being a problem.
Yeah, no,
like,
you have to think the way that I do. Nope.
Nope. Or, you know, or you're a bigot or you're a racist or, you know, you're not politically correct. It's like, no, two people can hold two vastly different opinions and they can both and then we can both at the end of the day shake hands and go, okay, see ya on Tuesday for Bunko.
Right.
You know,
and the thing that I hate to minimize it down to this, but I do so much of the time, I think, you know, are you involved locally politically? Are you really
right.
upset? Are you involved in politics on a local level?
No, but I posted a Facebook update about it, Richie.
I don't think it works out.
There were so many hashtags.
No, but I'm really upset because, well, then start locally. Are you locally responsible? Are you then stately responsible? You know what I'm saying? And there's so many people
correct.
Who really want to get upset about it who have affected no change
right.
locally.
Right.
And then beyond that, are you nice to people, right? Like, are you genuinely caring for another individual, right? We get really super worked up about whether or not this person is doing this. But instead of, you know, trolling a Facebook page or sharing a this, right. I could go to my next door neighbor and be like, hey, I noticed that your sidewalk didn't get shoveled and it's snowy. Can I give you a hand for a minute?
Also, Trump is terrible.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I think that there's things like that.
No. Approach matters.
I just
rhetoric matters. How you word things matters. The tone matters.
And then there's this. Do you know who Charles Ellis Johnson is?
No.
He lived and he worked in Salt Lake in the early 1900s and late 1800s.
So he's dead.
Yeah. I think it's not every day, writes this author, Mary Campbell, that you find an LDS temple photographer who has a sort of side practice in erotica.
Go what? On.
Campbell, who's an assistant professor of art history at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, studied Campbell's history and work. He was married to one of Brigham Young's daughters, who left him relatively early on in their marriage, and then he never remarried. Johnson ran a photo studio and drugstore located at the intersection of South Temple and Main Street. So South Temple and Main Street, there's a bank there right now.
Mm-hmm.
Bank on one side and then a business high rise on the other side. Actually, it's where the Joseph Smith Memorial. Wait, on the South Temple and Main Street. Oh, it's where the Joseph Smith Memorial Building stands. So the old Hotel Utah.
I worked there briefly.
As a waitress.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He'd make official portraits of various prophets and apostles. He'd take pictures of the LDS temple. And at the same time, he was doing a pretty brisk mail order business in erotica. He was never disfellowshipped. He was never excommunicated. So it was really sort of a secret practice.
What is Pioneer Erotica? Is it like the sleeves are rolled up?
Check out the pictures at theculturalhall.com.
Past the elbow.
While many of Johnson's more provocative images and the stories behind them are likely lost to the time, Campbell has compiled, that is the author of this book, known examples of her book in her book titled Charles Ellis Johnson and the Erotic Mormon Image. Erotic photographs have been around since the invention of the camera, and Johnson was not alone in producing erotic images at the turn of the century. But Campbell's research suggests that aside from making money, Johnson also had an interest in shaping the way people outside of Utah perceived Mormonism in Salt Lake City. From what I can see, says Campbell, he was selling mainly to out-of-towners. Johnson's blue photographs were taken in the years immediately following the ban on polygamy by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Quote, I think that what I want people to take away from the book is just what a crucial, fundamental part of American history the Mormon Church really is and has been since its inception.
I will not make a reference to his name. I will not make a reference to his name.
I think you just made a reference to his name.
And his profession.
Anyway, so such an interesting thing. And the pictures are safe. You can check it out.
Oh, okay. They really are just, I mean, we talk about erotica, and we really are just talking about knees and elbows and ankles.
It's 1800s erotica. It's fascinating to see.
Yeah.
Fascinating to see.
I told Levi to look it up right now because
I want to see.
I want to see.
That's it. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body.
Oh, and then when the time comes, you can travel home safely.
And that if you were not healthy enough to listen this week, that you will be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row
of the cultural hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.